Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, we have an occasional theme on American Variety that I kind of semi-jokingly call genderology, which is really, it's all about male-female relationships and not relationships in the, you know, Dr. Laura or whatever sense, but the ways that men and women are the same and the ways that they're different, right? So it's men and women, not men versus women, but men in comparison to women or whatever. You get the general idea, I'm sure. So it's genderology. You know, it's a series of different topics. And this week's show is on who's happier, men or women, all right? So everything we say in any of these shows is always so relative, and it's nothing's black and white, and everything's qualified. And so you have to understand that when we make pronouncements and so on, we're talking about the middle of the bell curve, right? It's, you know, understanding that at each end of the extreme on any statement or any comparison you make, there are people who are that or aren't that in the different genders. So today, again, we're talking about who's happier, men or women. My guest is Dr. Kim Deffenbach, a clinical psychologist. She was actually on one of the early genderology shows. I think it was Communication Between the Sexes, right, Kim?
That's right.
I'm going to start by saying that some recent studies have shown that men are now happier than women, and they call it, I guess, a happiness gap. And the premise is that in the 1970s, women were generally found to be slightly happier than men, and now they're found to be slightly less happy than men. And you may be wondering, why are you doing a radio show on something like that? But I think it gets into a lot of interesting topics. So, Kim, are you aware of that study?
I am. It was in the New York Times. It was a very interesting study. There have been some questions about the validity of the research behind the study, but I think it does raise the very interesting question of, is there a gender difference in happiness? Is there a difference as we age? You know, are younger women happier or older women happier? Lots of interesting questions.
So I think, you know, we can talk about it from different standpoints. Obviously, we can kind of compartmentalize our adult lives in different ways. And then I think that different aspects of those things come into play in determining in the end whether you're happy or less happy. And one area would be like work or professional life, and another is family life and the relative roles of men and women within the family and how those have changed over time. And then what I guess we can call cultural politics, you know, how women are viewed and how men are viewed and what's expected of them generally in our society. And then I think certainly, you know, the general nature and temperament and, you know, just the flat out hormonal differences between men and women. And all of those things, I think, come into play in determining your overall happiness quotient, right?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things that study said was that men spend less time doing unpleasant tasks now than they did in the 1970s. They said men are spending less time working. There's some debate about whether that's actually true or not.
Certainly not true in my case.
Well, and then men are pursuing pleasant tasks more. And so the authors hypothesized that that contributes to men's overall happiness and an increase in happiness over the last 30 years or so.
Well, I guess if it's true, it would contribute to your happiness. But are they saying that men, I mean, the way you stated it was men are doing less unpleasant tasks and are basically then therefore happier. Is it that women are doing more now? Is that the idea? Or is it that men just in themselves are doing fewer unpleasant things than they used to 30, 40 years ago?
Well, the authors of this particular study talk about how the women have added on work to everything else. And
yeah.
So they haven't opened up their time to fun leisure activities necessarily, where the men, maybe they're spending a little less time in work, though that's really debatable. But they've, according to the study, added on more pleasant experiences. I don't know, maybe taking up the guitar or reading or bike riding or pursuing sports.
All right. But when you say women have added on work, you mean paying work, career work, obviously on top of the traditional housework and child rearing and everything else. So they've added that on top of the traditional tasks to some extent. I mean, I certainly think that a lot of men share those tasks. And I also think that women do less of that. Just less of that gets done than used to be done 30, 40 years ago, I suspect.
I think that's absolutely true. And other studies have come out recently that show that men really do share a lot of those tasks. That the way men live is very different today than it was 30 years ago. There's a lot of cooking and a lot of cleaning and a lot of diaper changing, and things are very much more equal across the board.
Yeah, I mean, there's a merging toward each other in gender roles from what was the norm 30, 40, 50 years ago, certainly. But I doubt that men are happier because they're changing more diapers. I think if it is true, there's got to be more to it than that.
Unless their wives are happier, and then their wives are behaving in ways that make their husbands happier. There could really be a trickle-down effect from that.
No, that actually could be true, kind of a feedback loop to that, certainly. But that would posit then that families in general are happier, and I suspect really, my guess, being old enough to remember these things, that families in general are less happy than they were in 1960, let's say, but I don't know.
That's actually, there's an analysis of that same study shows that the trend is holding pretty consistent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That it's, when you look at all of it over across time and across genders, that 25% of people say that they're quite happy.
Huh. Okay. Well, I think that study that you talked about in the beginning, I read that women start out happier early in life. In other words, when they're measured or surveyed in their 20s, women are still happier than men. But as time goes on, they get less happy compared to men, right? They said that the crossover point, the trend reverses in favor of men being happier at around age 48. And so there are a lot of factors that, if that's true, again,
right.
A lot of these things are so squishy, right? And it depends on who you survey.
And how you ask the question and what words you use.
And what you're looking to find out already, what prejudices that, like it or not, you bring to this study,
right.
Which happens because we're, psychologists are human like everybody else, right? But taking that at face value, that men begin to be happier than women at around their late 40s or so, I'm guessing that the work and professional life aspects of things come into play there somehow. And also then the hormonal differences come into play there. Probably all of that comes into play with aging, right? So there's another study then that I read that was in something called the Journal of Happiness Studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, only in America.
Would we have an entire journal? I thought the same thing.
It is funny when you think about it that part of the Declaration of Independence, written back in the late 1700s, guarantees for us the right to pursue happiness, which was an absolutely heretical concept at the time. The idea that you could even be happy, much less that it should be written into your Bill of Rights. Anyway.
I think that our own individual pursuit of happiness or perception of happiness is really the more interesting question than what the studies show. Studies are showing trends, and we can all debate the different trends. But for people to ask themselves, am I happy? And if I am, in what areas of my life? And if I'm not, in what areas of my life, and is there anything I can do about it? Now, that's a really interesting question.
Yeah, it sure is. So sticking with work then, you said earlier that men have gradually cut back on tasks they dislike, which would be work for the most part, but I don't know if I buy that, and you said the same thing. Everybody I know works harder than they did 20 years ago, no matter how old they are. But there was this phenomenon that as people approach retirement, they generally report, men and women, that their work becomes more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
That may be a function of becoming more expert in your work, where you don't have to struggle as hard. And maybe you're past the competitive part of the career ladder where you're, where you've got nasty bosses above you and that kind of thing. Maybe you're more in control of your work life. I don't know. But that effect of work becoming more enjoyable as you get older is greater among men than women, if you follow that convolution.
Right.
So that reverses around age 60, that men then become much more satisfied with their work than women are at that age. That's what I read. And so the idea, what they speculate in the study is that because women have in many cases stepped aside from the workforce to have kids and so on, or worked at less than their professional and educational background would allow them to work. And now they've come back into the workforce, but they're sort of running behind in a sense. And so they're playing catch up, and they're not at the happy point that men are in seniority and pay and so on, right? So what do you think about that?
I think it's hard to ferret out. It would be interesting to compare the same groups of men and women. You know, are women that have been in their careers the whole time equally happy to men at that point? It's very hard to generalize over, entire groups of people. A lot of women that I know, clients and friends and acquaintances, they really feel like they have a great time in their 40s. The 40s are great years. The kids are older usually. They're on their own. The women are freed up to, pursue their activities. They're usually at a good point in their career if they've stayed in their career. I think when things start to decline, and this may correlate with the ages we're talking about, is when you get into menopause. A lot of people really struggle with that. And, everything from, obviously physical issues, the horrible hot flashes, to the emotional roller coaster.
And may I add that their husbands may struggle with that too, to some extent.
Absolutely. And you had Dr. Kim Zipper on a genderology show, and she talked about the different hormone fluctuations in men and women.
Yeah, we did do a show on how do men and women age differently.
Yes.
That was
it was really interesting.
There
I
were a lot of hot
that
buttons.
One.
There were a lot of hot buttons in that show.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there were. I'm sure there were. But that is difficult. And it affects the men and it affects the women. And what each one is going through affects their spouse. So certainly that's true. And, you know, then there's, of course, the whole issue with aging and looks. And I think from the 40s to the 50s to the 60s, our society, you know, how society views women really changes a lot. Because you can have the hot cougars, you know, in your 40s, and everybody can laugh about that. But you don't hear as much about that in the 50s and the 60s. And when you look at all the cosmetic surgeries and non-surgical procedures, there's a lot of pressure in our society for older women to maintain a youthful look. It's not just to look good, it's to look young.
That's right.
And I don't think men have that same pressure.
No, they never have, and yeah, they certainly don't as much. I mean, you know, and this falls in the area of, you know, as I was categorizing them earlier, of cultural politics kind of, but you mentioned the cougar phenomenon, which is, of course, for the three of you out there who don't know what that is, it's older women generally with younger men, right? Boy toy effect or whatever. But that's something that I think only really wealthy, powerful women by and large, enjoy or have access to or whatever, at least compared to men. I mean, it's a little more unusual anyway.
Well, I think that's true. And typically only very beautiful women.
Maybe
I mean, at least that's what we see in the popular culture. We're seeing Demi Moore and Courteney Cox.
Actresses,
and right, exactly. So that's kind of the model.
Yeah, I suspect there's a quieter under-the-radar aspect of it at the corporate world where it's the, you know, the vice president of the company is not so attractive, but she's powerful. And anyway, you know.
Right.
But certainly, as you were saying, our culture has become more and more geared over time, you could say for better or worse, and I'm pretty sure it's for worse, toward a fascination with youth and beauty and an insistence on youth and beauty in people. And that impacts women much more directly than it does men. There's just no way around it.
You know, and one of the other things that's happening around that same time period is the empty nest syndrome, which I think affects women differently than men in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, all right, so then that's kind of a cultural thing too, or, you know, but it's more a family life and roles thing. And I guess another thing is that, you know, in the past, let's say, you know, by and large, women 30, 40 years ago were focused more on marriage and the home and child raising than men were. The men would typically go outside the house, go to work and come home at 6 o'clock and go, "Hi, honey, what's for dinner? What'd you do all day?" You
know? Right.
And she'd be sitting there in tears and go, what could possibly be the problem? You didn't go out and beat yourself up trying to sell widgets, you know, but anyway, but there was that. So then today there is a much higher divorce rate, you know, and it's become almost universal. Practically, I think it's, you know, the divorce rate is well over 50%. And then people are getting married later or maybe not at all, you know. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot more single women out there or divorced women out there. So there's a big phenomenon of women who are not performing those traditional roles. And maybe there's some biological tie to feeling more satisfied and more having a greater sense of your identity and being happier if you have, you know, a happy family that you've raised. You're making faces because this sounds so chauvinistic. You know?
I am.
Well, but go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, I'm not sure. I mean, women are certainly biologically predisposed to have children. There are certainly obviously gender differences in the way we have and we nurture children. But I don't know if it's the biological aspect of that that's related to our satisfaction, or if it's that women have so many more choices today. Hmm. And there was a book written a couple years ago, and I want to say it was called The Paradox of Choice. It's a really very interesting book. But it just talked about, in general, how we have so many more choices today. You gave the example of going into the Gap and trying to buy a pair of blue jeans and how you have to decide between 20 different styles and then 5 different colors in each style, and then you get all worried that you didn't make the right choice. And it has lots of evidence that the more choices we have, the less happy we are, and the more stressed we are, and the less satisfied we are. So I think there's part of that. Now, personally and professionally, I would never want to advocate for women going back to not having many choices. You know, I think that that's a small price to pay. But I do think that we, all of us, need to be aware of how many choices we have and how that in and of itself can create unhappiness for us when it really doesn't need to.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Melbourne psychologist Dr. Kim Deffenbach about who's happier, men or women, you know, which is a multi-level complicated topic. And, you know, so definitely you're right, Kim, that our whole society has gotten much more full of options and choices. You know, the mobility is much greater than it was 30, 40 years ago, and career mobility is greater. Certainly for women, I mean, it used to be that you had very few options. You know, what, it was secretary, teacher, nurse, and a couple other things maybe or whatever. And now, really, women's options career-wise are the same as men's. But I think that there's, I mean, I sometimes think of the Chinese curse, may you get what you want, right? And in the 70s, women wanted to enter the world of men and busted down the walls, you know, tear down that wall. And they did successfully. And I wonder whether in the end it added to their happiness or just added to their overall stress. Maybe that world wasn't so great to start with and they shouldered that one along with the other world, right? So,
well, and or maybe happiness is the same. The levels of happiness are the same, or maybe they're caused by different things. You know, maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, people were happy because there wasn't any other choice and you know, you felt good about what you were doing.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, if they had the people who were feeling like they wanted a lot of choices, they weren't happy, you know?
Yeah.
Where I think now, I do think it's different for women and men now, because men still, with all the choices they have, I think the vast majority of men still are raised to think that they will go and they will get a job and they will work and it will probably be full time and they will be a contributor to their family income, whether it's their primary breadwinner or, you know, a dual income family, where women, I think particularly educated women who are in, you know, a marriage where they don't have to work. Mm. It is a really interesting paradox. I know that's true for my cohort of friends. I have a lot of friends who are quote unquote stay at home moms who don't work outside the home. Many who are lawyers and doctors and have master's degrees.
That's right.
And it's, you know, I don't know that anybody would want to trade that in, that freedom of being able to make that choice, but it certainly creates a paradox for people of, am I making the right choice and am I happy? And I think people really examine their happiness maybe more than we used to in the past.
Well, especially when you've invested and a lot has been invested in your education.
Right.
And now you're doing what your mother did, who dropped out of high school or whatever it was to get married, you know. So so that does engender some big questions, kind of philosophical questions, really. And I certainly remember in the 70s and 80s, you know, you'd be at a party or whatever and ask a woman, so what do you do? She said, well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And even more the women in the group than the men often would look down their nose at her like, oh, you know. And so the woman who made that choice was made to feel guilty back then. I don't think it's nearly so much that anymore at all. But there may be some twinge of that sometimes, you know, especially if a woman, you know, like you say, a lawyer who started off as a lawyer, then got married and has kids, and now her husband goes off to work, and he's a lawyer, and he's, you know, has exciting cases and is stimulated, and she's changing diapers and telling kids no all day long. You know, it can be just flat out boring and stressful in a way that's not rewarding, you know,
right,
personally in the same way.
It's true. And it can also be very, very rewarding, you know. It's
for sure.
Just,
yeah.
It depends on whether you're changing a diaper on a screaming kid right that second or whether, you know, you're having a great experience. But again, I think maybe we're really back to the choice issue, that it's not so much about men and women and are they really different. It's maybe that women actually feel that they have more choices to make. And so maybe they're feeling all these responsibilities in all these different areas. You know, if you talk to women, none of this is scientific, of course, but women will talk a lot about how, you know, they're really good at multitasking and they can keep the work and the babies and the this and the that and all these different things going at one time, where the guys, you know, they're great at putting their head down and marching forward on their single task.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, maybe it's not happiness. Maybe it's responsibility. Maybe it's stress. Maybe it's different perception. I don't mean that women are more stressed or have more responsibility. Maybe it's just the way they perceive it that leads to their happiness. Because happiness is awfully subjective.
It is, for sure. But I mean, you know it when you see it, kind of like art. When you're happy, you feel happy. I think it's...
Well, I don't know. That,
oh, really? Well, you're
a
psychologist.
No, I might argue with that. Because I think that you could have one person that, if somebody looked at them objectively, would look the same way or would come out the same way on a scale, but they would say, you know, my happiness is a 2. And you'd have another person that kind of looks exactly like them, same life circumstances, and they'd say my happiness is a 7.
Well, doesn't that come down to temperament to some extent? I mean, I think some people are sort of genetically wired to just be sunnier, and other people, I mean, some people will always see the glasses half full, and others will always see the same glasses half empty.
Absolutely.
Or even only 10% empty and be unhappy about that. You know, something, you know, and that's a, I don't know if it's temperament or attitude that you get from your upbringing or some combination. I mean, you're a psychologist. So what do you think? How big a factor is just temperament in whether you're happy or inclined to be?
I think temperament's a real big factor. I think, you know, another factor is this, what we talk about, locus of control. And do you think that, are you a person that perceives that things happen to you, which would be called an external locus of control? Mm. Or are you a person that perceives that you can affect the world, that you have the control? Not in a delusional way, like you can control everything. I don't mean that. But, you know, in general, I think if I work hard or if I study really hard, can I make this good grade? Or if I work really hard, am I likely to get promoted? And and so people who have external locus of control are typically report a much higher level of happiness than people who don't.
Hmm. So do psychologists call that being self-realizing? I mean, you're somebody who kind of makes your own destiny, and in the end, that can give you a better feeling of
you could say that. I think it's all kind of cyclical, right? Because if you believe that you can affect your world, then you act in ways that you can, you're more likely to create your own happiness.
So do you find that women, by and large, more often, more women than men, have, I guess you called it, an external locus of control, where it's their lives and the course of their lives are shaped by external forces that are out of their control? Did I get that right?
Yes. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the studies show, if there's a gender difference to that or not. I think that women, even women who feel that they have a strong external locus of control, may be dealing with so many different factors, you know, children. I mean, let's take a woman in her 40s, maybe. Say she is a professional who's working at home. Working in the home.
Yeah.
You know, she's dealing with a lot of different factors and coordinating all sorts of things, children and volunteering and whatever's going on with her husband and paying the bills and all these different things that she has to deal with. So I don't know that it's a locus of control as much as if there's a gender difference in that, as again it is that women are just, maybe they're dealing with a lot of different pieces.
Mm-hmm. Just different circumstances.
Just different pieces.
Well, I think, you know, it's always struck me that men are simpler than women. And
it's like a compliment?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it ends up, I think, being easier to be happier if you're simpler.
Mm.
And you talked about the multitude of choices. And I think more choices are thrust on women in our culture than they are on men. You talked about going to the Gap and looking at all the different options for, you know, for a pair of shoes or whatever it is, whereas men might buy another pair of shoes every 4 years when the last one wears out or something.
Well, that's a great point, because when I read that book, it made so much sense to me. And I called my mom and I told her about it immediately. And I called my mother-in-law and I told her about it immediately. But I don't know if I talked about it with my husband, because you're absolutely right. He narrows down his choices much more easily than most of the women that I know. And it's,
I mean, I can remember remodeling our house, let's say, and my wife and the decorator would, you know, would present me with the choices they had narrowed something down to, whether it be the tile and the floor in a certain room, and it'd be like 10 choices. And I would look at it and go, oh, that one. And they would be mad because it was too easy. And they'd had to agonize for, you know, a couple of days and several trips to the tile store to narrow it down to just those 10 choices. And I glance at them and go, oh, it's obvious it's that one, you know. And I think men don't agonize over choices. Maybe that's too broad a generalization. I don't know. Or maybe it's that
particular.
I don't know,
but that's a fascinating Sunday afternoon couples conversation for everybody that's listening.
Yeah.
Because what an interesting question. Because almost everybody I know, you know, just from anecdotal evidence, that's true.
Hmm. Don't they say that boys are easier as children? I mean, if you're a parent, isn't that the cliche, that boys are easier?
Yes, typically, as long as they're not, you know, bouncing off the wall or running out in front of cars. But
right, but
absolutely.
The middle of the bell curve, by
yes,
and large.
Yeah. Yes.
And is it because they're simpler and not as emotionally impacted by momentary events and that kind of thing? You know, you tell me.
Well, it's an interesting question. I think the boys in general, again, you're talking about generalities,
right.
They often really go with the flow a lot easier than girls do. Gosh, I remember, it's so funny. I have a good friend who has a daughter my son's age, and my son just did, he just went, whatever, you know, I picked out his clothes, I put food on the table, he did whatever, you know, I wanted him to do when he was three. And I kept my friend's daughter. And it was the funniest experience for me because she had an opinion about every single thing. And she wasn't bad in any way at all or disobedient. It was just such an interesting experience to see the difference between the girls and the boys. And then when my own daughter was born, she was exactly like my friend's daughter. Uh-huh. I mean, there is a huge gender difference in the assertiveness of kids at a young age. And the girls typically, again, anecdotal evidence, but they want to pick out their clothes and they want to have a say and they want to pick out their bedspread and their paint color. And boys just...
Boy doesn't even care if he has a bedspread, much less what it is.
No, they don't care if they have pajamas. It's absolutely true.
As long as I can sleep with a dog, I'm fine. You know?
It is a funny... I do think that women in many ways around the home and the children put a lot more stress on themselves than men do. Now, I think, you know, men, particularly if they're the primary breadwinner, they have a lot of work stress and responsibility, certainly. And a lot of men are very, you know, put a lot of emphasis on being a great dad and a great husband. And so, but again, I think the stresses are differently. And women have a real high level of expectations for themselves in many, many areas. A lot of women don't relax very well.
Yeah. So as I said at the outset, this is definitely something, all these genderology topics are things you could talk about for hours, and a half hour is kind of ridiculous to even try to approach any of these little topics, no matter how narrow they may be defined, right? But I mean, I have an idea, and this could be a delusion, that estrogen is kind of a happiness drug. It's kind of a sweetness drug, and that testosterone is an aggressiveness drug.
Right.
And that as we age and the levels of those hormones drop in the respective genders, that men become more happy because they relax more. They're not as combative. They're not as uptight about their relative dominance vis-a-vis other men and that kind of thing. And they just kind of relax and they become more female. They become more feminized that way. Mm-hmm. And I think our culture feminizes men anyway. And I think then women as the estrogen, you know, we talked earlier about menopause, right?
So sure.
To me, it's like as the estrogen levels drop, they lose that kind of feeling of insulation and niceness often. And it makes them edgier and maybe less happy, you know? So do you think there's anything to that, or am I totally off the wall?
Well, I just read an article in the Times last week that was a big hormonal study. And it certainly seemed to indicate that, you know, estrogen dropping is a real factor that people want to look at in terms of their emotional well-being and contentment.
One author I read said that happiness and satisfaction in life boiled down to the gap between what you want and what you have, and that she recommends that you, when you get to a certain point in life, you assess your goals and just figure out what's important to me. How do I want my life to go from here on? And if you can really sort of sort through those things, it may be possible that it will help you achieve happiness, or at least approach happiness a little more logically.
Absolutely. A friend of mine sent me a quote the other day that said, some people look for happiness, others create it.
All right. Well, that's a good note to end on, Kim. Thank you so much, Dr. Kim Deffenbach, for being on with us here. And thanks to you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.